You're listening to Otaku Spirit Anime Cast. My name is Andrew, and I'm joined here with Chris.
Yo.
Today's episode is on a topic that I kind of put off for a long time. I actually went through and looked at our archive of our website, and I'm like, I don't think we've ever covered this. And there's a good reason why not. But yes, romance in anime. We're a month late. We probably should have done this during Valentine's Day, but I'm always terrible at lining up podcasts with certain, I don't know, holidays. I don't care. Who cares? What anime fan cares about romantic times and Valentine's?
I do.
Valentine's Day itself, you care about it?
No.
Okay. But we care about romance.
Yes.
We like the Doki Dokis. But no, I think this is a topic that has been a long time coming, and there's a good reason why it hasn't happened yet, and that's typically because Andrew usually, you know, jumps the gun to make outlines for our podcast. And what topic does Andrew least think exists in anime, honestly? And that's romance.
Well, you're not alone on it, because my contribution to the whole anime or romance genre was the top bottom problem podcast that we did.
If we could find anything out of Chris when it comes to romance, it's typically a topic about top bottom stuff, because he knows that stuff through and through. So I guess, yes, technically we have talked about, if you want to call that romance, we've talked about romance in that sense, but never typically around the idea of just romantic shows itself. And like I said before, I think there's a good reason for that, and that's, I don't necessarily think that anime does romance right. It's really a hard thing for me to say, because it's not necessarily that I think that romance in anime doesn't exist, because I'm sure we'll get plenty of comments saying, well, what about this show? What about this show? I just honestly think that I don't think that they do it right. And we'll get more into why I think they don't do it right. But I think in a sense, it just never is a topic, because of how it's just, I don't feel, in my perspective, that it's very romantic in a lot of cases. So I've obviously have said this several times, but what is your overall, I guess, surface level thoughts on the idea of romance in anime?
Surface level, I think that they're excellent at mood. They're not good at pushing it past that. It's very similar to the whole what we discussed with horror anime. They're great at suspense, not so good at the payoff per se. Does that make sense?
I think so, because typically, and I think that really comes down to what is the cause for it not to feel very romantic, at least, again, in my eyes? Because I think there's a lot of cases where they do it right, and we'll get into those with things like, you know, puppy love. I think they do excellent puppy love. But I think that is a tell sign of what the problem is. I think the problem that you really face in romance anime is the age aspect. What is, like, 99% of all anime out there, well, probably 99.99999% is typically in middle school. It's even younger than that in some cases. That it's not even high school age characters that are in their early teens that technically don't really, in my opinion, have a sense of what romance is. And again, what I usually find a lot of the cases of enjoyable shows that have quote-unquote romance is going to be puppy love stories. It's going to be the Teasing Master Takagi-san. It's going to be those types of stories where Tsukigakirei, it's going to be those discovery of love. That's typically where we get, in most cases with romance and anime, is the puppy love point. The point of discovery of what love is, not necessarily when it gets into things that are more further into the relationships that I think are more romantic.
Yeah, it's a frustration in the fact of, I mean, because some of the stories that I think do really excellent tend to be in the more adult category. Mm-hmm. And so it's frustrating to actually kind of take into consideration the idea of, do they actually pull it off? My first inclination when romance it pops up is, okay, running through a lot of my shows that I do like that have actually pulled it off to a point, even them, they go back into that issue of the will they, won't they, top, bottom, all those the same issues that we tend to kind of chime on. But that goes back to, like we've said before, they're trope riddled, for a lack of a better term. They go back to the same formulas over and over and over again. The way they sell their stories is usually on the things around it, not necessarily it's the mechanics. What works? What sells? Some of my more favorite quote unquote romance comedies are usually the more harems, mostly because I like the hijinks and stuff like that. And I like having my cutesy moments here and there. But when it comes down to it, they kind of shoot themselves in the foot, because you can't develop a full love story out of that. And what do you want out of a love story? You want to see a progression of the quote unquote romance, for lack of a better term.
The relationship to build.
Yeah. You want to see them go from the first meeting to the building up the puppy love. Then you want to see them actually move to kind of, for lack of a better term, not necessarily first base. You want to see kisses. You want to see, and then eventually you want to see hand holding.
Sea base?
Yeah. Then you want to get to actual sea base.
programming.
But yeah, those moments are what they do, is they take players out of the game.
Yeah. I think that was, I think that's something that I really do need to, stress, is that obviously I don't really, I guess romance is similar to a lot of other genres where it almost feels like each person kind of sees it differently. But I think romance of any genre is the most, divided in how people see things as romantic or not romantic. Because, again, like I said earlier, I think most people would see something like, a harem as being a romance. Because, and I had the same problem when I was looking up titles to talk about for us to discuss later, is I'll put in the romance genre into my Annie list or whatever, and what comes up? A whole bunch of shows that I'm like, wait, that's a romance? Like, why is genre romance in this? Okay, well, the assumption there is that in a general sense, as long as it has one little nugget of somebody has a doki doki moment, somebody realizes they kind of like somebody, bam, slap that romance genre on there. Not that it is romantic in a sense, is that just that the fact that somebody in there was romantic at some point, somebody had a romantic thought, somebody had some sort of connection with somebody else, bam, there's a label on there. And again, I think most people would see something like, again, a harem, where it just has a bunch of characters that are just trying to fawn over the main character. And there's a lot of cases where it seemingly gets heavy. Like Love Hina, I think at some point it gets pretty heavy with the fact that characters have significant feelings for each other. And you really do have a sense that, wow, this can be a future. These two can be a future. This can be a pair. But in most cases, with a lot of those harems, it's just really the main character being a ditherer and all the girls going doki doki over him. And do you call that romance? Do you call that a romantic show? I don't necessarily do. And I think I get so stuck on the romantic thing that unless it's something like, here recently I watched Emma, a Victorian Romance, which I think you should definitely probably watch because you like a lot of the romance animes. That one was like, this is a romance. Like you can put slice of life on there. You can put historical or whatever on there with it, but this is pure through and through a romance. The whole story is around the romance. What is their relationship and how it builds and the difficulties they face? I can't really see that in most anything else I watch. It's always, again, typically puppy love, which, again, for me, it's difficult for me to call that romance. And harems.
Yeah.
And again, that's where I see a lot of people saying there's plenty of romance animes out there, and they'll label, like, I of course, typically whenever I do these lists or these videos or these podcast episodes, I'll typically go out and look for, you know, the top 10 romance shows or whatever, just to make sure I don't miss anything. And yeah, I'm scrolling through and I'm going, wait, that's a romance? wait, this is a romance? Like, what are you guys dictating as a romance? Just because somebody, again, had a doki doki feeling?
Yeah, you know, and another frustration tends to be in the aspect of, like, I mean, some of my favorites are like Kimi ni Todoke or some stuff like that, where it's in the shoujo genre. And then you go right straight into the other issue of, like I said, the top dot and bottom, and you end up with the not so much where the shonen side, you have the Ditherer and the or the basically nothing ever gets past the aspect of basically decisions not being made. On the shoujo side, you tend to be in the forceful, pushy, and the characters who are not necessarily ditherers, they go with the flow in a lot of cases. We've joked about the Bricks characters quite a few times, which for those who don't know, because we did recently discuss this
difficult to assume.
We discussed it recently, and somebody actually asked us, what is a Bricks character again? So to reiterate, if you go back into a lot of our older shows, we do discuss this. Bricks characters, for a lack of a better term, is usually in the shoujo side, where you have characters who, they're characters who, they're very, very, very bottom type characters, and they're drawn around by a forceful top type character.
They're very passive.
Yeah, they're very passive. And it almost seems like they have literally almost no intelligence. If they do talk, it's very, very light. It's usually some kind of a forceful type character who is dominating the screen, and they're just kind of swooning with whoever is on the screen at the moment. And you can usually see this in shows like Diabolik Lovers is the ones that I push the heaviest. If you want to see a Bricks character, go watch that show.
Sucks because the art style was great and that.
Yeah, it looked well. I tend to really love shoujo artwork. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, Clamp especially.
Yeah, and but at the same time, the thing I don't like is these quote unquote Bricks characters. You bring up was it Norn 9 a lot mm-hmm. of times. There's a couple of Bricks characters in there. I also bring up Amnesia as another one. That was actually yeah. kind of my first introduction to a character that I would later bring up.
Good art style.
Yeah, fantastic art. She was kind of the first one that I had when I started kind of bringing together this idea of a Bricks character. She was the first one I went, yes, that was the same archetype. These are characters that, for a lack of a better term, it's not so much that they're Bricks characters in so much as they are just poorly written, for a lack of a better term. It's almost like they don't understand the idea of autonomy. They're characters who really, when it comes down to it, they get caught up in the moment in a lot of cases, but they don't have their own faculties to voice their own opinion in a lot of cases. And it's not, like I said, it's not necessarily the story is bad. It's just not understanding boundaries and stuff like that in a lot of cases.
And that does bring up probably the biggest point that I have in a lot of this situation. And again, it's probably a big reason why I don't necessarily find enough romance in anime is I think there's a strong point to be made with both the aspect of both either a male or female writer or the idea of a shonen versus a shoujo. I think that typically what you'll find with shoujo series or series, again, necessarily are more often going to be written by a female is going to be a lot more romance focused. It seems like that is the thing that's going to be in their mind that they focus on. Now, granted, again, I'm not saying that all female writers are going to do shoujo. I mean, technically, one of the greatest rated anime of all time was written by a female, and it was not a shoujo show. Most people don't know that, you know, Fullmetal Alchemist was written by a female. What I'm saying then is that in a lot more cases than not, it's going to be a shoujo series, and the shoujo series is going to be more romance-focused, because I think in a lot of cases, and I think this is going to be my assumption. I don't know. Whenever we get into this discussion, it's very difficult to talk about because I really don't like to make assumptions about other cultures. But based on my observations, and again, technically mostly through anime and storytelling from their writing, I feel that I guess males in Japanese cultures are more focused on escapisms and fantasies and wish fulfillment and escapism that typically with the females you don't see. And again, assumption here, you can probably equate that to their culture of men go to work on, you know, way too long hours, 7 days a week. And so they want to open up a book that escapes them from reality and takes them somewhere else versus where the females, again, make an assumption here, probably more likely stuck at home, wishing their husband was there that can give them that love. There's technically a whole written genre aimed. I mean, we've already discussed this before, but typically in Japan, there's genres for every group of people, age groups. This isn't like America where you have comics are for kids, and there may be some adult comics out there. Over in Japan, there's ones for girls, there's boys, there's teenage girls, teenage boys, there's adult men, adult women. There's aimed storytelling for every age group. And again, I think a lot of the shoujo stuff is going to be, yes, for probably teenage girls. There's also a lot for adult women that gives them that romance. I mean, that's technically something in the West with novels. There's a lot of romance novels that are more geared towards females. But I think the more popular ones, I think in Japan, it's a sign of that disconnect between male and female that it seems like they have there, which I think is something that's kind of progressing in the Western culture as well. That sense of that disconnect between the two genders and how one seems to be more focused on escapism while the other one's more focused on that doki-doki love that they've never really experienced because of that disconnect between the two of them. And again, I think that's a telling sign of why both I don't see a lot of romance in anime because I don't typically go after shoujos. I do every now and then. There's some that really catch my attention. Saint's Magic Powers Omnipotent is a prime example of that recently. Is an isekai shoujo, technically, and it has a lot of that romance. Snow White with the Red Hair was another one that grabbed me, and it had that sense of romance there that I was able to gravitate towards.
Yeah, there's also the aspect of the they do in effect they have this same issue. There is an escapism in the Jose / shoujo side as
well. Was Jose the adult?
Yes.
Yeah. I was trying to think of the name of it, so I just with adult female.
There is an escapism in that. Now, the problem is that, and this is only from me kind of reading a lot of books and, well, listening to a lot of audiobooks, and take it for what it is. There is an aspect in the West. The West does it as well, effectively. They have kind of more forceful men, and at the same time, so there is an aspect of women liking the more dominant male, the more confident, everybody, this is just a, for lack of a better term, a trope that's embedded in culture in general. The problem is that it's not just that frustrates me. They like the more strong, confident male, and for some odd reason, I think that maybe it helps to make those characters stand out more if the female is more passive and just gives in very easily. It makes them stand out more. I guess that makes sense. And when I stop to think about it for a second.
It also goes back to that aspect that we talked about with like the isekais and how why they're so blank, why they're so there's nothing to them, and it's probably a self-insert aspect. You don't want a character to suddenly go, well, he was really hot and everything, but I really wanted to go make some toast. It's like, well, that's that moment that it breaks you out of that immersion that you're that self-insert that has been romanced because suddenly the character in the story chose a direction that you wouldn't choose. It breaks that immersion. But sorry.
No, you pretty much did where you're going. Yeah.
Again, I think that's a lot of my issues that surrounds my acknowledgement of romance in anime is typically I don't watch the shoujos. But I will say that when I usually give certain shoujos a chance, you know, it's usually typically if it's too much of the doki doki, here's the fluttering glitters around the guy characters every 2 seconds, it kind of turns me away. But whenever it does catch my attention, again, with things like Saint Magic and Snow White with Red Hair, they're usually ones that I really do like and I'm really attracted to it. And especially around the romance that's in it, because it's usually typically where I get that, wow, this feels, and when they're done right, not the top-bottom thing, when they're done right, they feel like natural relationships that are kind of building over time. I think the only example, well, I guess Bloomin' to You is another good example. It's Yuri, but it's one of the few cases of Yuri where I'm like, this does feel like a romance to me. It doesn't feel like, again, your typical Yuri where it's just, let's just see two hot girls get together, because obviously hot girls and all that kind of stuff. There's something there besides just essentially playing into a trope, playing into a concept. It's a natural feeling love that does, you know, have that feeling of the doki dokis, and you're like, oh my gosh, I want these two together because they're so cute, or oh my gosh, these two just are perfect for each other. I want them to be happy. I will protect their smiles, in a sense.
And that is a thing to take into consideration in a lot of cases. Most people, the first couple you see, you'll probably be fine with. I'm not saying that you can't walk into anime and have the most perfect refined taste, and you can see a bad writing, because there's always somebody who pops up like that. Most of us will come into anime and generally enjoy the first one or two that we see. Then after a certain point, we will start to see a lot of the mechanics involved in a lot of these shows. What do I mean by mechanics? We've talked about tropes before. Tropes are generally what we're talking about. Stereotypes, tropes, just things that are used in a lot of cases over and over and over again. It's not necessarily a bad thing. And we've discussed this before, is what they do is they help to push forward a narrative, or your narrative. And so you'll use things that are very recognizable and very familiar. Where it becomes good, taking something that is a baseline and making it good is where you go from there. I don't necessarily have a problem with people using tropes. I don't have a problem with people using stereotypes. In fact, I actually acknowledge and argue that they are useful. What happens is, in a lot of cases, it becomes all the tropes, meaning there's nothing outside of that. The point that I'm trying to make is, like, Kimi ni Todoke is technically pretty top-bottom heavy. However, what it does is it goes past that. I've actually talked about before is my frustration in a lot of the shoujos is the issue of talking to each other.
Yeah.
I get very, very frustrated when something can be fixed with a simple, this is what happened.
Yeah, with my extreme love of Taisho Tomy Fairy Tale, it still did that. It was like one of those things. It's causing drama with the lack of communication, where it's like, okay, stop the conversation and say, this is what happened. And they literally just walk away, and it's like, why are we doing this? Why don't you say, please hold on a second, let me explain the situation? No, it's always like, oh, they have the male character just stands there and goes, but, and then the girl just walks out. And it's like, you had like 15 seconds to say something right there, because you literally slowly walked out the door. It's creating tension through something that could be. And again, it's technically, to their credit, is the reason why you have an entire story arc around that lack of communication. But it's still like one of those frustrating things. Like, do we really have to do this? Do we have to relay on this? Everything else you're doing is doing perfectly fine.
Now, I do understand the aspect of misunderstanding. It's the lack of communication that frustrates me.
Yeah.
Miscommunication is kind of inherent in the Japanese language. The more and more you study into their culture, you do understand that they take a lot of liberties with their language. So that they will, if it's not necessary to get a point across, they will cut it out of their sentence. They just won't even bother. And they will even go so far as to shorten words. So miscommunication can be very prominent in their language. Now, that's
mean
not...
They like to say Persicon rather than saying personal computer?
Yeah, right. They will do that in a lot of cases, and that's fine. But actually clarifying if there is a misunderstanding being built seems to me the natural inclination. However, I've seen this in a lot of cases. Kimi ni Todoke is one of the few where I seen it, and it actually pushed forward the story. And I do love that about that show. It's one of those that I gave that one a pass on the whole miscommunication thing. Mostly because it's kind of like for those who are kind of more following a lot of the shows in this more recent stuff, Komi-san Can't Communicate is kind of similar to Kimi ni Todoke, where it's just a character who has a hard time communicating, mostly mm-hmm. because she's kind of sheltered herself away, not necessarily because she can't talk, where Komi just flat out can't talk. So it's not necessarily the same, but very similar in those respects. But yeah, that's one of the ones that I give a kind of pass on that. There was another one, Aoharu Ride, Blue Spring Ride. Mm-hmm. That one did fairly similar, to where it was characters who couldn't really communicate really well. Not necessarily, I gave it more of a pass because they do build the characters as an aspect of they just have a hard time communicating. Not necessarily because they don't communicate. Those are a very different animal, and I get frustrated with that.
I guess that's technically in the vein of the ditherer aspect is having that idea of will they, won't they aspect. And I think that is, I do agree with you. I think I didn't mean to kind of connect the two of them, but they technically are separate monsters. Let's just call them that. The idea of either the miscommunication or the lack of communication. But I think the lack of communication isn't so much an issue for me as long as it's done in a way that makes sense. And I think in a lot of cases, I think it makes sense. I mean, it's a frustration for somebody who is more able to communicate. And again, that goes back to the Western culture versus Eastern culture, where and typically a lot of, again, writing and what they kind of portray their society as is they're not very outspoken. It's kind of frowned upon to be very outspoken. You have to be kind of in line in the cog system. Again, technically, that's something that I think the newer cultures or the newer generation is trying to break them out of. But it's still kind of a deep-rooted aspect of Japan, is not really being that outspoken, to stay in line and don't really be boisterous. And I think that's an off-putting thing to be open about a lot of things, especially when it comes to love. It's something that they want to keep more private in Japan, whereas over here we're always, God, we got to get on Facebook and every social media and post pictures with us together every 2 seconds. It's a different feel, but it's whenever it kind of gets into anime and storytelling that we kind of consume here, it's a little more frustrating because you're like, well, why don't you just say something? Well, it's different. It's a very different culture. And so whenever we see those, we get frustrated because we're like, shoot, I would just tell her. Like what is your problem? But again, I do like whenever it becomes a story beat. When it is somebody that is just not comfortable with speaking, they've had issues in the past where they've spoken out and everybody made fun of them. And they have that deep-rooted fear of being, communicative. Vocal with people around them, bringing that to people's attentions. And so again, that does become basically a story beat. It becomes the main focus. In a lot of cases, it becomes the climax. Just open your mouth and say that you like this person, or they obviously like you. That's the teasing master Takagi-san. But again, I give Takagi-san a pass because the whole point there is that she's matured and he hasn't. So she sees romantics, or she wants to be romantic to him, but he thinks it's just, she hates me. She's a girl. Ew, gross, cuties. It is the difference in maturity that they're kind of focusing on there. And so it does create that. Where in typically, in a lot of cases, if they were both mature in mind, you get frustrated. Like, why don't you see the obvious signs here that she likes you? I think Nagatoro, Miss Nagatoro was a prime case of that, where it was like, okay, they're obviously both mature here. I mean, they act immature because they're still technically teenagers, but it was nice that it didn't really take long before you kind of had a sense there that they both realized what was going on. And again, hopefully it's something we can get into more with the second season of that series, but it didn't play too long on the idea that, dude, there's a reason why she does not want to not be around you. There's obviously something going on here. Take the clues. But again, that goes back to my frustration there with most romance, or at least things labeled romance, is that it's going to kind of be stuck in that area. But yeah. Anything extra on that one?
No, I think we beat it to death pretty hard.
I think the next thing that this kind of shuffles right into it is, I think that the other problem that I really kind of feel, and this goes back to our previous or earlier discussion on this, is I think why we don't see, again, enough actual romance in anime is, and this is a question I want to pose to you. Do you think a lot of issues really stem around the fear of the writer committing? Because what happens typically, and this is also partly to do because we don't usually get full adaptations, and typically with the source material, they'll get to that point eventually. But it feels like in a lot of cases, even with stories that are originals and stuff, you don't really have that full-on commitment at the end. It always feels like the writer always leaves it open at the end. Like, are they afraid of the individual waifus being not chosen? Like, are they afraid of the death threats they'll get because they chose this? I mean, technically with Snafu, we kind of seen that a little bit, where you have a choice that the main character makes, and everybody's mad, and so the writer has to come out and go, oh, by the way, I'm going to do a separate volume where it's a different route. Like, this will be the route where your girl gets chosen, and then everybody's going to be like, well, what about this girl? Okay, well, I'll write a book for that one, too. It's like you can't even commit to your own story because you're afraid of the backlash, because you've basically built, you know, fans' relationship with each one of these girls, and that's the problem with the harem element, really, technically.
Yeah, if anybody didn't see the direction that was going to go in Snafu, I don't know what to tell you. I didn't even have to get through this whole second season, and I knew where that one was going. Yes, I agree. I was also going to throw out the idol issue of just literally you can't commit because it just makes...
It makes her impure.
Yeah, it makes her impure.
Your waifu is now taken. How would you... You don't want that.
So I think both of those, I think they're both hand in hand. Exactly the issue of the... You can't have it because it's an they're quote-unquote idols. At the same time, the can't commit because it will make the backlash is just too much. There's just so many aspects to this. There is no viable solution to the issue because you've just built up the will they, won't they for so long that when they finally commit to it, then there's the backlash of, well, why didn't my favorite or my waifu get chosen? I mean, that's
obviously the wrong choice.
It's obviously the wrong choice. I mean, we all know who should have been chosen in Snafu, but when it comes down to it, nobody likes wiener dogs except for me.
The wiener dogs should have been chosen.
Exactly.
No, the other thing is like, the other one that I liked was really, well, it's technically still ongoing, obviously, but with the case of the rental girlfriend, it's like one of those rare cases of like, good, hopefully he doesn't choose the one I like because he's a pile of garbage. I don't want him to choose the one that I want to win. But
well, that's where you and me always have our fun. Just put this girl and this girl together and just send them off the ship,
ship the two other harem members together and be fine. There was a couple of shows that were like that, where it kind of had them a little bit close to each other. It's like, yeah, let's go with that. They're happy together. They're embracing with a. It's always like the aspect of like the main character chooses this girl, and it's like, well, that was the wrong decisions, but you know, good on you, whatever. Have your life together. I don't dictate it. And then you cut over to the other girls, and they're obviously crying because they weren't chosen, and they like embrace each other, like, yes, excellent. We'll go with that. We'll go with that. That was technically second place, first and second place right there. So I'm perfectly fine with first and second getting in a relationship. So
we could always go with the boat solution.
The boat solution is, I mean, I did have it in the list later on to discuss that, you know, technically School Days is one of the greatest romance of all time. whenever I see somebody ask for greatest romance choices, it's like, there is no romance in anime. Watch School Days. Because technically that is the, again, I've wanted to make it a full on analysis of School Days one of these days, and just really kind of
I technically
take apart
need
that
to
series.
Watch it just to get it over with, so we, that we I should... can say that I have watched it. That was one of those that I'm kind of glad I got that spoiled, and I don't have to actually go and bother watching it because I already know the solution.
I think it's one of those ones where I want to do like a full deep analysis of School Days, because it technically is, it's essentially is. I hate to use this term. It's a deconstruction of harems. It is this is what really should happen with harems. We always watch harems where it's just like this guy with a bunch of girls. And this was one case where it's like, let's just throw a huge wrench into your typical trope.
Well,
and
he was,
really
he was...
have fun with it. And it's like, it's a fascinating, it's as much as we meme on School Days and we throw it in the dumpster and we laugh at it all the time, and it always thrown out whenever somebody asks for suggestions for shows to watch, it technically was doing something very interesting there.
He was an anti-dither, wasn't he?
Right.
And he was just, it wasn't even really a harem.
He was
so
a player.
Much as he was actually cheating, right?
Yeah, he was a player. I think it's nice to really kind of acknowledge that there is different styles of romance too. I mean, we've already kind of hit several times on the, yes, the harem route, which, again, I think is more prominent in the male side of writers, just because, again, I think that when you think about the difference between male and female writers when it comes to storytelling, in a lot of cases, you're going to see the female writers wanting to be more romantic and more expressive, whereas on the male side, they're going to be more escapism and getting away and fantasy fulfilling because, again, they're searching for that escape into somewhere else rather than to kind of focus on what's right in front of them. Now, that is a bad thing. Escapism is a good thing. I believe that escapism is good. Now, granted, yes, there is the far, you're going too far element, which is escaping from all reality and not really wanting to own up to your responsibilities. But escapism is good to get to basically, you know, let yourself relax for a minute, which is good to de-stress yourself. But I think the different areas of romance definitely hits their points where they do want them. Again, acknowledging harem romance for escapism and that element of wish fulfillment. Getting into rom-coms where I think it's more focused on just having fun with a little bit of romance in there. It's hard to really say that a romance can stand alone. It's kind of like when we were talking about, I think we did an entire episode on Slice of Life. And Slice of Life itself is a very hard sell when it's just a slice of life. You typically have to have some heavy drama in there. You have to have comedy in there with it. And I think romance is the same boat. It has to have something to go along with it. It's very rare to find successful romance slice of lives. Typically, it's going to have action in the romance. It's going to have the comedy in with the romance. I mean, Kaguya-sama, Love is War, is a prime example of a solid romance that has an injection of comedy to keep the viewer's attention or the reader's attention as it builds that romance.
And that's very true. And that's actually kind of something that I kind of wanted to drag into the at some point as well. And I kind of side skirted it and completely forgot when we got off on some random tangent. The aspect of a good romance, yes, the tropes and the mechanics and the archetypes are all fine and dandy. I don't have a problem with them. In fact, I argue that they are useful. What is crucial is after you've built that skeleton is what you do after that. You can't just rely strictly on those. You have to sell a story outside of that. And when you go back and think about all the ones that you have that are the quote unquote successful ones, I like Skip Beat for a great is an excellent example of this to a T. I love Skip Beat, so I have a huge bias towards it. But I think it does have an excellent setup. It does a lot of the quote unquote top bottom. Because the main character, she's one of those that are you could argue that she's kind of a Bricks character. I would argue against it. She has her own autonomy. She is very vocal about what she wants when it comes down to it. She sets up boundaries. She is very forceful about her boundaries in a lot of cases. So in a lot of cases, she's very anti Bricks. However,
she is molten rock.
Yes. However, when it comes to certain specific characters, she does slip right into that bottom character.
Sounds familiar to a recent show.
Fina you Pirate did watch Princess. It, right?
Yeah, I think we watched it together after we got the box set.
And do you feel like she, when it comes to certain characters...
Don't even remember most of it, okay. So don't even ask me. That's my other problem with romance in general, is in most cases are very forgettable, unfortunately, for me. There's a few that stick to me, but a lot of cases are very forgettable for me.
When it comes to her main drive, her becoming an actor or an actress, she is very, very vocal about how she wants to do with that. With a certain character, she is very vocal about how she doesn't like that character. However, when it comes down to it, when she gets in the vicinity of these two quote-unquote characters, she falls right back down into that bottom role. And it's funny how she plays off that system. So it's one of those that I just really love it. But one of the things that comes out of that is her career as an actress. This is something that I point at mostly because of the fact that it's doing right. It is pulling the romance in there. It uses this storytelling of her actress career as a pinpoint to show, yeah, I've got the romance here and I'm going to keep playing it. And that show or that story can get away with the top bottom problem. It can get away with the will they, won't they. Why? Because it's not about those. It's about her actress career. That's where the story really is. And shows that are pulling that off. Just, we talked about this in the harem when we did the harem podcast. It's not about the ditherer or the forest. You can't see the forest for the trees. Those are all there. But when it comes down to it, what sells the harem? The story on the side. The real story. Whenever we bring up the harems and we say this is actually a good harem, what is it about that harem that's actually happening? It's the story that's outside of the harem, the isekais. What are we talking about with the isekais? Stop getting stuck on the fact that it's an isekai. What is the fantasy story that they're telling? Just because it started out as an isekai doesn't mean that it doesn't have a good story. Go on that aspect. Stop getting stuck on, oh, well, it's just isekai number 575. The same thing here. If you give it a chance, find out if it's an actual story that just so happens to have romance elements.
I think breaking out of the mold of the I guess the template is the important thing. And I do agree with you when it does come to things like, again, I mentioned earlier, Kaguya-sama Love is War, it's a prime example of whenever it finally, the comedy is the focus, and technically the romance is the punchline most cases. It's always like, you know, basically the two of them competing against each other. Who wins in the end of this match? The narrator always does that. Well, here's this next part, this next situation. And then at the very end, he always says, like, you know, Kaguya won. You know, she gets that one point. And it's always in those more brief moments where suddenly you realize, oh, crap, they're having a moment. It feels more natural. Technically, when you... Again, this is the difference in what everybody sees as romance. in life is, yes, you can make a pure romance where that's all they think about, but you need something to be a driving force. There's nothing worse than having a character who their entire existence seems to be about this one person or something like that. Yes, you can be head over heels for somebody, but you still have thoughts of other things. That's always been kind of my one core issue that I have with a lot of harems, is I'll have that. Sword Art Online had that issue. At some point in the second season, at some point I realized, wow, these girls need hobbies. Like they eat, drink, and sleep. Kirito. That's all they. It seems like we don't really get any character development around them. It seems like whenever we do finally see them, what are they talking about?
They're all around Kirito all the time, or they're off to the side having dinner and talking about Kirito.
Yeah, that was the joke that I made when we had this whole thing with the Gun Gale, and you had Kirito in there, and he was dealing with the situation with Sinon, and then at some point it cuts to the girls, and they're in this, you know, Elfheim or whatever it was, I forget what it was, the world that they were hanging out in, and they're having this little round table in this meeting room, and what are they talking about? They're not talking about, yeah, man, I just got this great new accessory, or, man, I was, you know, I had this one job and I just had this creep show up or whatever. And they're not talking about their lives. They're not talking about their interests. They're not talking about their hobbies. They're not talking about anything. Kirito. It's like, give them something to them outside of the romance. And that's when you'll see those flaws in them. It's important to always have a driving force outside of the romance. And that's why you get those mixed genres with things like Slice of Life, where it's going to be more about their daily lives, their jobs, or something they're aspiring for. And then romance happens. You have the action romance, where it's about, you know, a battle with good and evil. You have the rom-coms, where the comedy is the punchlines and the romance just happens naturally. It's very hard to say that you can have a pure, even with Emma, a Victorian romance, which I think is probably the most purest romance I've probably ever seen in anime. You technically still, it is still technically a slice of life. It's still about the main character and his dealing with his family status. And again, technically Emma dealing with the fact that she is a commoner and she's working as a maid, and the two of them finding love in each other. There's still something to keep you going while that romance blossoms, because there's more to these people's lives than just doki dokis, which, yes, you can argue with a lot of cases of things outside of, yeah, a lot of cases with even the shoujos that I end up dropping in most cases, it just feels like this is nothing but about how this guy looks really hot and she can't stop looking at him and she's a total bricks character. I mean, even with a lot of cases with the puppy love ones too, I think a lot of the cases they deal with that with things like Tsukigakire. It was a lot about their school life and everything, and then discovering love. Teasing Master Takage-san. It's about, again, their teasing relationship and her trying to get his attention. And even with a High Score Girl, it was technically love discovery as well, with the element of, yes, gamer nostalgia and getting that old nostalgia back, and the progression of arcades and video games over a period of time, and that interest. And oh, by the way, love happens. It's always the best ones. It's always the most punchline ones that I really enjoy in the end.
There is some that I have a hard time with, and yet I love them at the same time. But those are the ones that actually pull off selling me characters. One of them that I is the...
Yeah, I agree. The why?
The one where the girl comes out and slaps him in the face with the roses.
Golden Time.
I love that one and absolutely despise its ending.
The ending. It's always the ending.
It's always,
even Sakura-sou.
Yeah.
Loved it. Like, I love what they were building, and then the ending. And then I go, why did I even bother getting invested?
Well, and that's the thing. Going back to what we were talking about earlier, of no matter how you look at it, the writer is going to be in this kind of catch-22. But I agree with you in the aspect of why put so much emphasis into one character.
That's what I hate.
It's
the bait and switch. What is that a fetish in Japan that I'm not aware of? The bait and switch.
And, yes, no. There is a fetish for that, but I don't want to think about it, okay? It's
good into that stuff.
It's one of those sad things of
there's like two of them I can think of. That's the problem. There's two of them I can think of. And I'm running with both of them in my head. Like, which one is Chris thinking of? Oh gosh.
It's the sad thing is that it's the same thing that I came up with, okay? It's you made this point and then you said, is it a fetish? And yes, it technically is.
There's a couple of them though.
It's the sad thing is that you can't get past the frustration of technically they're doing what we're saying is they're writing a character well. The problem is that in the process of doing that, they're completely cutting out another character, which is the one that they want to sell you on.
Yeah, that's the problem with the cover character. It's like
I was getting ready to say.
They know the writer was like, okay, this is my character, and they're gonna put it. They put a lot of effort. They get an artist to draw them to make it a really beautiful looking character, or a very hot character, or a really cute character, and they throw that on the front of the label. So it's like, okay, so I'm gonna open this book. And you quickly acknowledge that you have multiple girls of interest. Do I keep reading, or is this cover your character and you've already decided? That's the frustration I have. It's like, should I even bother with the other characters? Are they there for a reason, or are they just there for you to cause drama around the fact that you are not going to choose these characters? But my frustration really stems from whenever the writer gets so focused on these other characters. So, like, they take over the show for a long, extended period of time, and then suddenly you have that point where they go, ah, never mind. It's the ReZero Rem issue. It's the Sakura Sao issue. I can name so many shows that this happened just because did it. There's so many shows that do this where it seems like this character takes a third, sometimes even half to maybe two-thirds of the show, and the story is taken up by this one character, and then they go, ball. And they run over here to this other character. It's like, what are you doing? Like, again, is this a thing in Japan? Do we really like this?
It's one of those frustrating things. It's almost like a death sentence to, and this is why we quote-unquote love and hate childhood friends so yeah. much.
Childhood friends are just such a big thing of that.
We love them because they are literally, they're quote unquote the perfect waifu in every way, shape, or form. You go into all of your lists. More than likely, you have at least one childhood friend in your list. And you remember that show and how they did your childhood friend dirty. The only one that ever did it right was the only one that ever did it quote-unquote right was the one where the childhood friend wins, and even then the childhood friend did not win.
they all win.
It's sad that literally I don't care what show in front of me, and the second I see the childhood friend, I can almost guarantee you 99% chance that childhood friend did not win in the end.
They're crying in the end.
Yep,
every time they're crying in the end. Ugh, it's gonna get this topic, and I wasn't really prepared for it. It is an issue, and to give the writers credit, there is something to be said about, again, that I guess the idea that you misinterpret the writer to want you to self-insert. And typically a lot of cases with the harems, they want you to self-insert. They want you to get in there and choose your waifu, choose the one that's best girl. And then in the end, when they don't choose the direction you want it to go, it's kind of frustrating because you feel like, no, he made the wrong decision. I followed this character for, 12, 24, 25, 50, hundreds of episodes, and I feel like I know him better than the writer. And so I think he chose the wrong choice. So there is an element of that, and not realizing, Subaru doesn't like Rem that way. Okay, this character doesn't like the waifu that I like. They want somebody else. Well, I'm not the main character, but it's still frustrating because you think you, again, have invested so much time in the show, the story, the character, and you're like, this is the obvious choice. This is the perfect girl. What is wrong here? What am I not? What did I miss that the writer knows?
There is the, I think that we've talked about it, the, I think you brought up the idea of the shiny new thing.
the ball.
The ball. Where you have a character who is you're comfortable with, you understand that character, and they're not the quote-unquote sloppy girl that just excites you, and so you take care of that character, and that's literally what I mean. I'm spoiling it as much as I am, but Sakura Shao did that in the aspect of taking care of the character, becoming invested in that character. She was shiny, she was new, she excited him, and that was the whole point.
Now, I think the only thing I'm okay with Sakura Shao is I know that it continues on. So I'd know that it's technically not ended.
There's another aspect to it is the
plus
for lack of a better term,
it's become a joke for us.
Yeah. There's an aspect of what is the value of the new character, for lack of a better term.
The new toy.
What is the value of it? You're giving up the old to get the new. So what is valuable, and the more and more that you can play up that what you're giving up, why is now this is what where it gets frustrating for us is that value does not equal what you're selling us on. So you almost, and this is why in a lot of cases why I love and I hate Golden Time. The ultimate decision that was made, and those of you who have watched it, you know what the decision was made. I could have been good with either choice. And this is the frustrating, because and why do I say that? To me, they sold both characters that well. And this is what I'm talking about. When you have a value proposition, this is why I kind of in some cases I like the character in Sakura Shao and the choice, but at the same time I can agree with Andrew in the value proposition was not high enough. It was you give me a little bit, and this is why I ended up, and I didn't want to end Snafu, because I had already been way oversold on one character, and I knew there was no way, shape, or form that they could ever offset the value proposition. Does that make sense?
I agree. I think there is an element of the viewer, reader, slash whatever, putting value to characters. And yes, sometimes it's as surface level as I think this character's hot. Like, their body type is perfect. I love their head. Mm-hmm. I love their archetype. I like Tsundere's versus... I like Tsundere's more than Dandere's, or Kurere's more than Tsundere's. You have a surface-level attachment to characters, but I think where the trouble usually comes with is, I love how this romance podcast
we're,
is turning.
We're turning this into some kind of weird mechanical thing that doesn't make sense.
we're turning this more into a discussion of harems and love triangles, but... I think that's an important thing to note, is that idea of putting value to experiences and how the writer, the reader, I keep saying writer for some reason, the reader, viewer, slash whatever, is essentially putting their own self-value to aspects of the story that sometimes I don't think the writer will intend for them to put as much value onto. Or in some cases, the writer's like, I know I got into this, but you don't realize how important this is to my character. Like, again, it's that disconnect that you have with the writer and the character as a viewer or a reader that I don't think the writer intended to happen. So when it comes to something like Golden Time, I'll just say the loser did something, was always doing something significant for the character. And I put a lot of value on that because of how attentive she was to an issue, it for me made me think it was much more valuable than what it kind of transpired in the end. And so it frustrated me in the end that wasn't as valuable to the main character that I seen in it. And that's something equal to a lot of cases with, again, other shows where I think that how much time is given to attending one character and how much it baits the female character into thinking that they're special together, and then to have that disconnecting point where they go, sorry, I love Amelia, you get frustrated because it's like, well, what the hell is with Amelia? Like, who is Amelia? Like, we haven't seen her at all. And again, that might be a problem with adaptation. It could be a – and I think that's another thing to really keep in mind is, especially if it's an adaptation of a source material, you're not getting all the context. And that's a frustrating thing that I think I feel in a lot of cases when I'm watching a show – and I know it's from a source material, and I don't understand why the main character is making the decision they're making. I go, is it there's just some inner dialogue I'm missing? Does the ReZero light novel have maybe scenes or inner dialogue of Subaru that makes it make more sense to me that we're missing because they want to keep pacing proper?
It did, but it took too long to get to that point. If you remember right, they did a kind of a flashback. I'm going to call it a flashback. You know what I'm talking about. And in that flashback, it showed his room, and there was a lot of characters that looked like Amelia in
his
room.
Yeah, he likes
elves. Yeah. And that was the main frustration, is that it took too long to get to that point, and they didn't sell that. And
I don't even think that's enough. Like I said, I think it's more probably if anything is going to sell me on that being enough, it would have been if the light novel has inner dialogue where it really susses that stuff out. Because again, you have, if you really think about all the way up to that point where he says, I love Amelia, it's this long period of time where we barely ever see Amelia.
Right.
Yes, we've seen her at the mansion, but that's like way back here. And it's emphasizing how he's going through, I don't even remember exactly how many they emphasize on, several loops of him having this one girl at his side basically helping him along this attempt to save somebody. It's like at some point you got to realize, look who's next to you. And that's the struggle. But again, technically, in the end, he's got the best route, which is, if I can get with Amelia, Rem's fine with it. He gets the win in the end.
Yeah,
he knows he's much smarter than we are. He's got the plan. It's just frustrating at the time.
No, I agree. It was one of those things of another character that was not sold. It didn't put the value in front of you that said, this is why this makes sense. Until like way later, and then you're going, well, okay, I guess I get it, but that's way too late. I mean, but at the same time, it's like, it doesn't matter. Roping it back into the original intent of why I even brought up a lot of this stuff is the main point of what I'm trying to say is that when you set up this goes with the harems as well, is when you set up these mechanics, you have to have something that gives them a reason for doing what they're doing. To bring in another kind of to me good example was you've mentioned it, the Snow White with the red hair, the one where she got sold in the auction to the
Ancient Magus's Bride. Don't even bring up Ancient Magus's Bride. That's just that's a terrible romance right there. That's just that's just control love.
Yeah, there's a lot of them that are, in a lot of cases, all these shows are doing this. A lot of cases, they're doing it the right way, where they set up the skeletal structure. They say, this is what we're going to do.
Ancient Magus's Pride, yes, skeletal structure. I got you.
And then they turn around and they say, Bone we have Daddy. It all set
was
up.
It, was
and
it
then,
Bone Daddy? Is that what everybody was saying? Bone Daddy? God dang, dude. I was like, oh, please don't say that ever again.
They set up a structure. My gosh.
Bone Daddy.
You like totally broke me. I was doing fine. I had a thought process, and then we went right straight into fetishes again.
I forgot that was a thing, that everybody was calling him Bone Daddy when that show was out.
Okay. So my point being is that you get the structure set up, and then you have some kind of a story that is coinciding with it, that is giving the characters motivation, giving them plans, things that they want to do. Ancient Magus Bride is not necessarily about their romance. As a matter of fact, very light in the romance side. I mean, I'm impressed.
It is technically creating a heart. It is. It's the Beauty and the Beast aspect.
Yeah. It is one of those that by far it's one of the lightest romance side as you could ever see. And yet it's still technically there. I mean, you can definitely see that it is a motivation that will at least see some fruition towards the at some point in the future.
I would argue it's a lot more romance than most all shows I've watched.
Yeah. In its light, how well written and very lightly spread across the storyline, you can see more, for lack of a better term, pushing forward of that story than in a lot of cases the other ones that we're even bringing up, where it's so hard-headed and just bluntly placed in front of you, and you go, well, that you're not selling this story to me at all. It's so,
I think it's nice because it's natural. It feels very natural. It's just them being together, and you realize, okay, they realize they're important to each other.
Mm-hmm.
I think is a lot of it. So,
and that goes back to what I was talking about before, like Skip Beat. Skip Beat is kind of in a weird way very similar, where it's so lightly peppered in there that. While the main character, I think her name is Kokomi. For lack of a better term, or because I'm having a hard time trying to remember. And Kokomi keeps popping up, and it's like,
you really want to play Genshin?
Yeah, I don't think it's Genshin. because she is so anti getting in a relationship. She's her quote-unquote main love interest is just somebody that she respects, and as they're going through and going forward in her career, she's just inadvertently falling in love with him, even though she's so anti-love that it works. So it's the actual opposite of a romance, and yet it ends up being a romance. This is one of those things that if you can sell the story well, the romance just naturally falls into place.
Yeah, yeah. I think that the other thing that I really want to discuss before we kind of just run through a list of shows to kind of just give some suggestions for people, because I always love doing that, it is odd to me how much, and I made an argument against this earlier, this idea that it seems like because every single anime is young characters, because that just seems to be an area of writing that they just like to do in Japan. They like to keep it in that area of, you know, teenagers that have their whole life ahead of them. They're not, they have
Seishu.
Yeah. We talked about this before and why people get so frustrated with the fact that every anime seems to be about young characters is because they are young. They're still impressionable. They still are making decisions in their life. They haven't chosen their future. That is like the boiling pot for your life is your teenage years. And to get into adult characters, they're already set in their ways. They know what they want. They're already kind of doing their future. There's not much storytelling available when a person is matured and have chosen the life that they want to choose. So, even despite me saying that that is an issue where typically it's always in teenage years, and so it's always about discovery, it's not necessarily romantic, it's more just, it's puppy love, as we would call it. I still have to admit that in a lot of cases, I love the puppy love stories. I think they're great. I love that discovery of the doki doki feelings. Like, what is this feeling that I'm having? And that realization that these characters do want to have something more than just a passing by with a character or something more than just friends, that definitely is something that I enjoy. A lot of shows that I enjoy are kind of around that. Tsukika Kirei is definitely a prime example of that. Surezure Children was a great example of that. I really love that series for that. Again, Teasing Master Takagi-san is that discovery element that I think is quite different than what you get with the other shows like Emma and with something that's more adult focused. I mean, with something like Violet Evergarden, obviously. I guess technically Violet Evergarden is a lot about discovery as well, but that's a different type of discovery. that definitely, I don't know, it's interesting that seems to be, again, technically something more prevalent, but something that is a lot more, I guess, encouraging for me. Even like some of her, Hori Mia has a little bit of feeling like that, but they're a little bit more, they knew what they had the moment they kind of realized it. They didn't, there's a difference between puppy love and young love. Puppy love, what I mean by that is where it's, they literally have a doki doki moment and they don't know what it is. So it's that aspect of they're so young, they're so pure, and they don't really know what they have. And I do love that element. And I think when it comes, the next stage from there is typically, yes, they're in the teens, and they, when it happens, they know what it is. And like I said, Hori Mia is a good example of that. You don't have five episodes of what is this feeling. It's, yeah, I think I like this person. And they might not be forward with it. They may, again, with Hori Mia, she was using an excuse to bring the guy over to see her brother. To use an excuse to get together, but she knew what it is. They knew what that was. And so it's something a little different than puppy love. And then, yes, you get into the later stuff where it gets into, that's usually where you have the harems. And then later on, it's into something that's just like pure romance, like adults with Violet Evergarden, Emma, and all that kind of stuff. So it's interesting that middle area, I think, is where a lot of my issues has, because I love the puppy love. I love the pure romance. It's just kind of that middle area. I just don't, it's hard for me to really label it as something that I find romantic. Is more just kind of wish fulfillment or just having, just not really solid romance. There is, again, there is the, I guess the rare cases of things like Hori Mia and stuff. So, or like Tada Never Falls in Love, I think is another example of that. Or Your Lie in April. Mention Your Lie in April at some point in this podcast episode. Andrew was going to stay away from it, and he decides to be the one to bring it up. So yeah, anything else before we just dive into some lists? I kind of pulled, I think, most all of, I went through, like I said before, some top lists, and I went through some of my Annie lists with the romance filter, which didn't really do too well in my opinion, but it is what it is, because everything has to be, it's like you can't filter by action or adventure. You're gonna get everything because everything has action adventure. If somebody jumped once, it's action, and that's typically every show. But now, like I mentioned earlier, Violet Evergarden, I think, is besides Emma, I think Violet Evergarden is a really good romance. Now, the only problem you're going to have with Violet Evergarden is it's not so much Violet herself. It's a lot to do with people around her. She's technically writing stories about, or writing letters for people.
Yeah.
That's what they do. They're the auto machine dolls, what they call them. Auto memory dolls. And so their whole purpose is to write letters for people. And so it's a lot about her discovering what love is, but at the same time, it's a lot about the love of people she's writing for. So a lot of those stories really do supplement the romance until eventually it's the point where Violet starts discovering romance. And so it is one of those very rare cases where I really like that it's a different take on romance. It does get into it. It does really ramp it up, especially with the movie. But it's a really solid romance, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree. That one was one that I was trying to remember where the romance was in it. And you're right. It was something.
Did you watch the movie?
Yes.
You did? Are you sure?
Pretty sure.
So you have concluded the story. It feels very concluded.
I'm almost positive.
All the questions answered.
I'm almost 99% positive.
Okay, so you don't have no questions about that show.
No.
Okay, you probably have watched it then. The main question mark is finally answered. So,
it's one of those that it's been a while, and it's like, oh yeah, when Andrew mentioned she's writing letters back and forth between others, and that was where the romance was. I agree, and that was one of those that is it's. Like Andrew was saying, taking it from a different angle instead of the doki dokis for the main character, it's doki dokis outside of that. And how would somebody from the outside look at those? And this is actually perfect example of why there is so much frustration. See, I think that Miyazaki put it very well in the fact that if you want to be a writer, you have to have interest in people. You have to, in an artist in general, you have to have an interest in what you are making art for. If you like flowers and you decide you want to do artwork, you're going to do artwork of flowers. If you and that's the same thing with
writing. I thought the grandpa in My Dress Up Darling said that.
oh my gosh, Grandpa and I, maybe they were going, they were thinking of Miyazaki when they did that.
And My Dress Up Darling needs to have a cherry cigarette in his mouth. That's confirmed.
It's one of those things of you have to actually like people. You can't just hate people and then write stories, because what are you going to do? You're going to your vision of what people are is going to be skewed by that frustration. You're going to be skewed by
empathy for people.
Yeah.
I think empathy is like the greatest thing you have to write about people. Yeah, you have to understand them. Mm-hmm. So
And that's the thing that I find absolutely fascinating about Violet Evergarden is it's the actual perfect personification of what we're talking about by far, because it's somebody looking at a romance from an outsider's perspective, because that's what we are technically doing. We are looking at romances that are not our own, and we want to, like Andrew had mentioned earlier, we want to insert ourselves in that Doki Doki moment. We want if you like the shoujos, you want yourself to be slammed on the wall when the cute guy is staring down at you. That's what you want. If that's the what you're or in guy's case, if you want to say it that way, you want to be the guy who's slamming your hand on the wall and looking down at the cute girl and going, oh man, okay, she's cute.
My mind was going that you're a guy
you
that wants to be the bottom.
If you want to go with the BL side, hey, Andrew, you go for it.
There's a show coming up next season that is a prime example of a female wall slamming a guy.
So oh, there you go. We got it coming. Maybe we'll do that.
There's a lot of cases of it.
But yeah, I think that Violet Evergarden is in a lot of cases an excellent example of seeing it from the outside. And yet, and like I said, there's those aspects of the self-insert and the understanding the what is it that you are Doki Doki-ing about.
What makes you Doki Doki?
Mm-hmm. What makes you Doki Doki?
The Asan voice is one that I really do like. Now, this is, again, kind of going in, it's not really so much in the realm of the puppy love, but it is in the realm of not knowing what's really ahead of you. But what I think makes a silent voice so interesting is that it's not necessarily from the vantage point of guy pursuing girl because he's romantically interested, but it's something that blossoms through, I think, the circumstances of redemption. And so it's a struggle for me to say, because I think the story isn't about romance. It's about redemption, but it technically does have a little bit of an element of it. Circumstances lead to things.
It has one of the best romance stories that you could possibly have. Just like we had mentioned before with the idea of the story pushes the romance. The romance does not push the story. This is Silent Voice is an excellent example of that. And going back to what I had said before, you have to actually like people to write about people. Silent Voice is, while it's very, very touchy in its subject matter, it is one of those that, because it starts out very antagonistic, and yet there is a pure heart involved in the antagonist or in the situation. And then through redemption, the other character finds that he has there's value in the relationship more than the, kind of one of those you don't know what you've got until you lose it type things. There's a whole bunch of things that are very raw emotional moments in that story that can, and it's one of those stories that I wish, really, really do wish that it finished more, went farther than it actually ultimately did. Because I just love those characters and they're so well written, and there's so much, I have so much emotional investment in these characters, and I want to see farther into their life type thing.
Yeah, I always struggle with a lot of these where, yes, like I said before, technically we don't get a lot of full adaptations for a lot of these stories, but when we do have a full adaptations, it's like, even in those cases, can we have a time jump? just to kind of see where all the characters kind of go. I mean, all the characters technically, but yeah, Recovery MMO Junkie, I'm I seem to remember that I really enjoyed the romance that was in that story. Again, it was kind of more circumstantial circumstances. They kind of just kind of stumble upon each other and they're kind of build up with that relationship. But overall, it's a really fantastic story. Taisho Tomy Fairy Tale, we kind of talked a bit about that already. A really fantastic. I really enjoy the aspect that it's, again, a case where they're kind of thrown together. And there's no really expectations of it being romantic, but in the end, because they carry each other so well, I think that's one of the best examples of romance that I personally enjoy a lot of, is it's that two people are kind of stuck with each other, but they realize how much they mean to each other. It's not so much, oh my gosh, she's hot, I need to be with her. Oh my gosh, she's so handsome, I need to be with him. It's really a case of they carry each other. They are each other's rock. They are each other's pillars. And without each other, they're kind of broken in the end. And I think the way that kind of portrayed that was really fantastic.
Yeah, there's an aspect to these two characters that they're just such fundamentally fantastic characters. I say characters, but I mean just they're just fundamentally good people. She's a really great, pure-hearted, just hardworking person, and he is, while he's broken character, he is fundamentally a good person. And so one kind of overwhelms the other one, and they just become a fantastic two characters together. And that I think is one of those that two characters that are both building each other and becoming stronger in their own right. And I think that that is one of those things that really shines in this story. And that's one, again, another one of those stories where I can't wait. I really want to see farther into their story because they just were so good for each other and just so well done that I trust that writer to do a fantastic job in future stories.
Yeah. Again, we mentioned Saint's Magic Power is omnipotent quite a bit. It's one of the few cases of a shoujo isekai, female main character show, that does really well in kind of creating a blossoming relationship. And it doesn't really rely too much on, here's cute girl in other world and throw harem on them. It wasn't really like that. It didn't feel haremy at all. Even though there was a lot of really hot looking male characters around her, It seemed like the writer knew where they wanted to go, and it didn't really tease too much, which I do appreciate a lot. And yeah, I mean, solid main character. She definitely wasn't a Bricks character. it's like the seal of approval for us is it's not a Bricks character. So the seal of approval. Watakoi, really great example of love is hard for an otaku. Really good example of an adult. Kind of centered story of blossoming relationships at a workplace and their geeky habits outside of the workforce. And I really did enjoy it for that. And we had a second season announced for that, right? A long time ago?
I thought we did.
But I thought we did.
When it comes down to it,
that
one was one of those that had an excellent payoff in the end.
The characters are great. Like, all the characters are so good in that show and just love seeing them together and interact with each other. So it's kind of similar to the case like My Simp is Annoying. Very similar. I think if you watch one or the other, you're going to want to watch the other one because they both have that similar feeling. It's technically Service X Service, but Service X Servant. That one, I think there is a love that blossoms there, but it's not as prominent. It's more about the workplace shenanigans. Kind of similar like
Working. You should look up her name just so that we can...
No.
Her name is fantastic.
No. My parents couldn't decide, so they chose everything. So she decided to go to that workforce so she can get it changed. Sure. I think she shortened it. Didn't she shorten it to Lucy or something like that?
Yeah.
I love her. She's so great. I love her to death. Why couldn't we get a Blu-ray of that? Why will only DVD-only release? I'm still mad about that Aniplex. It needs a Blu-ray release. Anyways, Whisker Away was pretty cute. Again, I think that's more in the realm of love discovery, of course, but it was one of those kind of they're not really interacting, obviously, because of how it's set up. She's technically a cat. She becomes a cat to hang out with the boy that she likes. And so it's not really like a direct interaction that's happening there. But I think it is cute for what it's doing, but it's hard to call it romantic, even though technically it is romantic in her eyes throughout the entire thing. Erna the Vampire Cosmid, I think that's a recent, another recent example of something to stir me to want to do this podcast, is another very solid case of a show that I watched it and said, this is a romance. Like, I want these two to be together. I want them to be happy. And it feels like the world is preventing that, obviously, with that story. Vampire, world with vampires, people think vampires are less than human, or less than dogs, technically. And this whole idea of her being a test pilot for space travel, and it seemed like everything was against them. It is like kind of like the star-crossed lovers, I guess, in a sense, but it definitely was a romance that in the end I was like, I really want these two to be happy together. Please, story, let them be happy together in the end. Like, everything was against it. The immovable object that was before them that to prevent it from happening. And I think that was, it did that very well.
And yet, and that goes back to what we were saying is the idea of what is the story here? The story is about a character who is kind of being thrust into being, like Andrew said, a test pilot for a rocket ship that goes into space. That's the main story. The whole story is the story. And then what is the romance? The romance is the guy who's trying to help her survive this entire process, and they end up kind of, like Andrew said, the star-crossed lovers towards the end.
Yeah, yeah. Just Because was a pretty solid one. Again, that's in the vein of I hate the choice made in the end, but it was still cute. It was technically in the vein of Love Discovery as well, very much so younger characters. Maiden and Savage Seasons, definitely. I think the whole aspect there is girls discovering what romance and love is, and it was an absolute hot mess in a lot of cases, but it was a solid one as well. I think that was a Mario Kata one, wasn't it?
Which one?
Oh, Maidens or Savage Season?
I think so, actually, yes.
Yeah. I wouldn't call Remake Our Live very romance. It's the main character's very disconnected from romance, so it's hard to say that's romance. Again, that's going to be one of those ones that kind of just pop up on my list, and I go, why? Why? Day I Become a God, its start is about seeking romance. And I think in the end, it becomes a story about what's important. And in a sense, that is romantic. So that's a tough one for me in the end. Izaki-chan wants to hang out, technically, in a sense, is getting more romantic as it goes along. It is one of those ones where it starts out as teasing girl, kind of like Nagatoro. But then over time, you realize they kind of are getting hints in there. They're having their embarrassing moments that make them realize that there's something else there than just, let's hang out and have fun, senpai. Yeah.
She's so awesome.
Yeah.
I love her to death.
Goofy. Ao-chan can't study. That one's a hot mess. That is an absolute girl discovering love. And I love it to death because it's written by a female. I love getting a perverted perspective from a female writer. And the idea of kind of that relatability of like, okay, look, she is willing to say, look, we can think about some pretty crazy stuff. And I feel like that's like that, again, the female perspective of the mind running rampant with what they want from another person.
It's not always
pure, I guess.
It's one of those things that like Andrew was saying, a glimpse into the girl's perspective in a lot of cases, that's what made this such a fantastic show. That and Garu, what was that, Galko-chan? Yeah, where it was kind of more from the girl's perspective of a lot of
that one's the name. That one was written by a male, but yeah, it is from the girl's perspective.
There's more to girls than is on the surface, is basically where I'm going, not necessarily the whether or not it was written from it.
Right.
You see your shiny girl, but there's a lot more behind the surface level. And that's one of those things that makes, and in particular, this one shine is seeing it from her perspective of behind the scenes.
Yeah. Immediately thought of the stupid mall analogy. Why does the writer have to be a douche? The mall analogy was great. Anyways, moving on. Girlfriend, obviously one of the greatest romances here in recent history. I'm kidding partly. It's just an absolute... what if harem actually worked kind of argument. So have fun with that. That's just more, again, more comedy. I give the main character a lot of credit for being, yes, broken, but sort of romantic in a sense. But it's hard. Again, hard sell for romance. Happy Sugar Life, Twisted Romance? I don't know. That one got dark. It's basically love so much you're willing to kill for it. But if you're into that, there you go. Gunbuddy Doki-chan, very adult, very much about a girl loving a co-worker and a lot of doki-doki feelings and that pursuing of said romance. I think it's a good, for what it's doing, being a short, I think Gunbuddy Doki-chan is a really good example of just a very simple adult romance. Girl wants this, goes after it, guy's an okay guy, and doesn't take advantage of it, that whole situation, so... Yeah, I think it's a solid one. Moving down, there's a lot of stuff that we've already mentioned. A lot of these, I like instead of having to go through the whole list and explain why these are good, that we just kind of inserted them in discussion. But again, Scum's Wishes, again, another one that's more kind of a twisted romance. Yeah, it's discovery through essentially two people who love two other people, and they supplement their love for those two other people with each other. So they're basically saying, okay, well, you're going to be an insert for the person I actually love. And they agree to that. And there's a little bit, again, a twisted romance to that that kind of develops. But again, it's an interesting take on it, I guess.
One of the reasons why I liked that one, per se, is it's raw emotional kind of down and dirty to where it was. And I don't know if you end up bringing up Flowers of Evil. That's very similar. Is a fact of getting down to your most raw emotional moments and internally, just exploring that. Whether it's good or bad, it doesn't matter. Just explore that part of yourself, and that I think is what Scum's Wish kind of catches, and that's kind of why I like it more so.
Yeah, yeah.
Not so much it's romance. It's not the greatest of romances.
Bloom Into You, we mentioned that a couple times. Really solid Yuri romance. I was really into it. I kind of wanted them to do more of that series just because I was into that particular one. Clannad, obviously. I'm not going to get too much details of that, but technically it gets pretty romantic towards that part. Which I do give Clannad a lot of respect because it was technically based off of a visual novel with multiple routes, and the way that they were able to weave that together as one single story was really solid. I'd really do appreciate the work they did with that one, even though it feels kind of disconnected at times when it goes down its routes. In the end, it does a really solid story, and especially around romance. Now, again, you could probably argue that a lot of that's not really something that comes to fruition until you get into the second season and everything, but it's there. So, yeah. Let's see here. Ori Monogatari, you can talk about that one. I didn't enjoy it so much, but...
I absolutely love this. This one is... I would put this more in the category of kind of the puppy dog or puppy love type thing. It's one of those where I think that where this one really shines is its aspect of kind of breaking some of the tropes and yet using those as kind of a comedy in itself, because this is technically more of a comedy type show.
Kiss Me Through the Cellophane?
what it does is it takes the basically all that you a lot of the tropes that you see in most stories and it breaks them. So because the hot guy technically is not the one that the cute girl likes, why? Because she's seen the side character off on a train, and he helped her and she fell in love with him, and he automatically assumes, well, obviously you're not here for me, you're here for my buddy here, who my bud is the one that all the girls go for. And she's like, no, I want you. And they very quickly bloom a relationship very quickly, which is something that's not usually done, but that's this route for these characters. And I do love the fact that what it does is by using the concept of we're not doing the typical. We're telling a story based on the idea of this, and then they kind of toy with the tropes. It's doing a lot of the same things that Kaguya-sama does and a lot of these other ones, which is a huge gamble. And like, for instance, between me and Andrew, I love the way it works. Andrew, not so much. But it is one of those that is a gamble, and that gamble, to me, pays off.
I think I like the core concept of it. Mm-hmm. It is one that I want to go watch again. I honestly, at this point, I don't remember why I didn't like it. Because I thought it was a cute concept, the core aspect of it. I think it was just maybe just the surrounding story and how much it was just it. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that it kind of clears everything up really quickly. Like, there's a misunderstandings early on, which you kind of got into, and then it clears it up pretty quickly, and then it's just really about them being together, and it just didn't seem like I got much out of that. It's like, okay, cool, they're together. I don't really need to see them together all the time. It's a rare case where it's what you were always asking for. It's like we always want that after story of after they get together. Like, this is the first, like, what, two or three episodes is literally the whole story of most romance stories. It's that build up to finally clear things up and they become a couple, and we never get the after. Now this is the case where literally the whole story is the after, and it's like, yeah, I guess I don't really want that, because I'm not really getting much out of this. But yeah, I do want to rewatch it to see if, because there's a lot of cases where there's shows that didn't work for me back, but I've changed my taste and I'm a lot more accepting of a certain thing. So it might be one of those ones that it kind of turns out me. Maybe I'll give the Wolf one that you like so much. Maybe I'll give that one another shot.
Oh, Wolf Girl.
Wolf Girl and Black Prince.
Black Prince. I don't know that you would like that one.
I love the
EV you have
a lot.
To you have. I think that Wolf Girl and Black Prince is, if you really
felt abusive,
understand.
To me.
Yeah, if you understand the top bottom problem, I think that one will work for you, because you have to understand really what it is that they are playing on. There is literally, they are playing on the top bottom problem in spades. And that's where, like I've said, they have the very, very pushy person, and then they have the bricks character. Well, Wolf Girl, quote unquote, Wolf Girl, if you stop and think about it, and Black Prince, you have literally two characters that, and this is why Kaguya-sama works, is it's two quote unquote top characters, and they are literally vying for who is going to be the one who, for lack of a better term, submits. I mean, you obviously, towards the latter episodes, you start to see who's going to be the one that ultimately will submit and become the bottom. But when it comes down to it, you have two very high top characters vying for that top spot in their relationship. And Wolf Girl and Black Prince is kind of that way. Is you have two top characters, and they're, in a way, if I remember right, it's been a long time since I watched that show. I want to say that in a lot of cases, the Wolf Girl was kind of egging him on in a lot of cases. And
well, she was, if I remember correctly, she was using him to get attention or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, she was lying that she was with him, I think it was what it was. And then he realized that she was lying to do that. And he ended up starting to use it against her. I forget.
Yeah, something. It's been a long time. So, but yeah,
thinking of a different show.
There was something, to it that was kind of making that interplay. And like I said, if you understand the whole top bottom, then Wolf Girl and Black Prince will kind of make sense in that aspect of it's toying with tropes.
Yeah. And I think that was, for some reason, it felt like there was a point in which it kind of got really nasty towards her. And I want to say it became abusive to her. Something happened that I was like, I'm done with this. So, yeah, just taking lying about her romantic exploit to earn respect for new friends. So when they ask a picture of her boyfriend, she hastily snaps a photo of a handsome stranger whom her friends recognize as a popular, kind-hearted Kaguya-sama, trapped in her own web of lies, desperately trying to avoid humiliation. Erica explains her predicament to him, hoping that he will pretend to be her boyfriend. But he's not an angel, as he appears to be. He actually is a mean-spirited sadist who forces her to become his dog in exchange for keeping her secret. So yeah, definitely kind of goes in that realm of top. Anyways, Kimi ni Todoke, I bought the whole series with plans of watching it. It's one of those mini shows that I buy hoping that'll force me to watch it, and then I keep putting it off, even still.
But one of the things that I can't wait until
I know Andrew, that it's like literally on everybody's list as being like the greatest romance ever.
This is one of those that when everybody catches on to the idea of one of the things that Andrew will walk away from this. I remember long before the whole "I want to protect your smile" thing that me and Andrew kind of made out of the shows that we watch. This one was one that I literally, this one, and I think you have the other one is, where is it on your list? Kamisama Kiss and Kimi ni Todoke. I know that if Andrew watches them, one of the things that I absolutely walked away from those more than anything with was the, I want to protect the smile out of those two. And I know that Andrew will probably fall in love with the smiles from those two characters.
Well, that's similar to Fruits Basket. I mean, the whole concept there is about terrible Honda, things happening to people, and that kind of when they smile, you're like, that's a broken smile. And I know it. And nobody else knows it, and you just kind of want them to be happy. And I think that Fruits Basket pulls it off really well. Just with that, technically, it's romance based on just trying to accept people and technically protect them.
Yeah.
But yeah. Where were we at in the list?
We were at
5 centimeters per second. I think that's more kind of bitter romance. Very bitter romance, unfortunately. But definitely a really cool little short story about that.
You mean bittersweet.
What'd I say?
Bitter.
It is bitter. It is super bitter. There's no sweet about it. It's just bitter. It's straight bitter. I didn't stutter, did I? Moving on, I think I skipped it for a second. Spice and Wolf, it's there. It is definitely there. It's a very cute little kind of back and forth between the two of them. And I think it's one of those ones that it feels like they don't really want to admit it, but there is an element there. It's like the prideful wolf and the common traitor. And it almost feels like they don't really necessarily see there should be a connection there. Obviously, a spirit doesn't really want to connect with a human who is mortal, and I think the mortal realizes that there's a disconnect there as well. So I don't want to say forbidden love, but it almost feels like there's a forbidden love aspect always throwing a wrench in the mix. But you obviously see, especially through the this whole situation, that she literally forces him to admit it. But there is a bond between the two of them that I think is really solid, and it does have me super excited for a continuation, hopefully a readaptation of the entire series in the future. But it's enough that I went out and bought the light novel, even though I haven't gotten a chance to read through the whole thing. It's a lot there, and I think it's one of those classic examples of a great romance building up through circumstances, because they're just traveling together, and love kind of comes from that. So, yeah, it's a solid one. And even though it's funny, whenever I see Spice and Wolf, I don't really think romance first off. I think economics, and I think a funny little relationship between the two of them. I never really, it's sometimes I always forget, especially based on just watching the first two seasons, that there's a really solid romance in there as it builds up. So, yeah. Let's see, what are the ones that we should bring up? Tamako Love Story, I know it had something building up, and I haven't gotten a chance to watch the movie yet, so I'm not gonna state on that. My Little Monster, it's been so long since I watched that. I want to say that was a communication thing. Garden of Words, I know you really like that one. It is a forbidden love one, right? That was a forbidden love one kind of story.
It is, and he's just good at more. He just does environments really, and he just has a story that is there, and it's usually some kind of a bittersweet thing. And it's just one of those where it's a bittersweet. Like Andrew had said, it's a forbidden love thing that is kind of more, it pushes more in the realm of, No, they're not going to, obviously, and that's why it's bittersweet. And yet at the same time, it's one of those that is the sensual moment of expressing that what is their deepest internal motivations and who they want to be. And I think that all comes out in that story.
I don't think we can do this entire podcast without mentioning Toradora. It's like, that's probably one of the most beloved romance stories. And again, it's a shocker because it's not necessarily about the romance for quite a bit of it. It's another one of those ones where, because circumstances, they find themselves together. It's because there is a little bit of a break in this particular character, and through kind of remedying that break, they realize there's something special there, that it ultimately comes to a really powerful. I think it's such a powerful and impactful story for romance because it's something you don't necessarily see until it just kind of happens. And it's been a while since I've watched it, but I really do feel like, from what I remember, it was something that never really hit you until you get to like that later point of the story where you suddenly go, oh, wait, there's something here, and they're actually going to go this direction. And it was really shocking, but at the same time, I was fully accepting of it because it was so well done. It was so naturally and well done to have basically a hole in somebody that somebody else was able to fill that gap and really make them whole again. And I really do like that. So
what I think Toradora pulls off is what we kind of pointed out with the idea of the childhood friend of... They put the two value propositions, and then they oversell one, and then they flip it and say, no, the shiny new object is what you really want. They actually pulled off flipping that on its head. And they actually say, look, the childhood friend is right there. That's what the main character wants. But here's the shiny new object, and the shiny new object is going to help you get to the childhood friend. So they literally are flipping it on its head. And that's what I think that Toradora actually pulls off in spades, is they actually do the value proposition in front of you and they sell you on the shiny new object.
Yeah, pretty much. That punches you a lot.
That punches you a lot. She is so adorable. I love her to death.
Taiga's great. What else I had on here? Real life. I haven't watched I'm sorry. I still have not watched the OVAs that basically conclude the story. But based on what I've watched of it, it was really good. Minus the really crappy music that was basically done by one person slamming their fingers on a keyboard. It has a great story to it. And again, it's kind of one of those aspects of an interesting kind of quirk to the storytelling that creates... The story itself is very gimmicky. It's this idea of again, taking this medicine that will give you your high school days again. And to take something like a gimmicky thing like that and actually have some sort of love blossom from it, I was really shocked by it. I really did like it. There was obviously a lot of other stories that were told through the eyes of the main character as he experiences this. But to have that, again, that nice little punchline at the end to introduce a romance that I was really sold on. I really did like what they presented and technically why it's there. Why that romance opportunity was there really sold it on me. It didn't feel super romantic early on, but it did definitely sell it to me when it eventually starts getting to that element. So,
yeah, I really need to go back and finish that story out.
Yeah. I think Say I Love You, do you remember that one? It's been a long
time,
too.
Yes and no. I know that I don't want to speak on it because all I'm doing is sitting here mixing up Hot or Ride with it, and I know that they're very different ones.
Was that the one with the chicken lips?
They're both... Yes, did actually, Say I Love You and I think that Al Haru Ride was the one that I was actually talking about with that.
Oh.
So it's... This is the one that had the communication... They all have communication problems, yeah. So... but I think this is the one that I was thinking of when I was talking about the, when I brought up Al Hara Ride, this is the one that I was thinking of. Oh, how frustrating.
So watch both of them is what Chris is saying. Cause he doesn't remember them. I think that's all of them. I think all the other ones I have in the list are really kind of just some little bits of stories of romance or just straight rom-coms, which we've kind of covered rom-coms to death technically in this whole thing. So yeah. Definitely awesome. I'm glad we got as much discussion out of this as I I didn't really plan on having this much discussion out of it because, like I said before, I'm not really good with romance anime, but I think we hit some really cool subjects. I really wanted this to be a naturally flowing podcast, and it ended up really doing that to flow into a lot of different thoughts we have on romance.
Put the title up as romance slash it turned into a harem.
It always turns into a harem in the end. But yeah. We hope you guys enjoy this episode. As always, we are at otakuspirit.com. You can find all of our links to all of our social medias as well as ways to support us if you have the means to do that. We definitely appreciate it. So definitely welcome you there. We also have a link to our Discord where you can jump in there and talk to us directly. We have a lot of people on there that are already talking about different random subjects, which is a lot of fun. But yeah, as always, we definitely appreciate everybody that listens to us and supports us. And y'all take care.
Os.